So welcome to your last class in the L3 orals classes. And I thought I could sit down, but I can't really sit down. I don't know how to do that. We have chosen this time a speech by Jeremy Corbyn, a very left-wing leader of the Labour Party, who led the Labour Party for a few years. Now, we didn't choose him because he was left-wing and because Margaret Thatcher was right-wing, so you have one right-wing person, one left-wing person, and you can make a balance. That's not the reason. The reason is that the Labour Party, just like the Conservative Party, is a big part of 20th and 21st century history, and understanding approximately how it works is tremendously important. And the first thing that it's necessary to understand is that inside the Conservative Party, you have different currents of ideas. They have something in common, but they have a lot of discussions, debates, disagreements. In the same way, inside the Labour Party, you have different currents of ideas. Sometimes these debates inside the Conservative Party or inside the Labour Party can be quite vicious, quite aggressive, quite high temperature. And I think this is probably because there is only one party, only one big party on the left and only one big party on the right. You see, in France, on the left, you have three or four. The Communist Party, the Socialist Party, the France Insoumise. And on the right, well, you have Macron, you have Le Pen, and then you have the Republicans. And you have to act as if in Britain, the debates between these different parties in France all happen inside the same party in Britain. And sometimes this can make people more aggressive because they're hoping to be able to mobilize one of the big parties, which will definitely be an alternative government. And so all this can happen at rather a high temperature. So there you have the picture of him, and I know that you're probably not experts at this, but if you look a little carefully, what do you think about his suit and his shirt and his tie? Well, you're not really experts, but it's a bit approximate. Yeah, it's not an expensive suit. He looks like he doesn't wear a suit very often. This is true, incidentally. So it's all a bit approximate. This is important because not only does he have left-wing ideas, and if you want to characterise his ideas, you need to think very approximately he's the sort of Jean-Luc Mélenchon of British politics. That's the kind of ideas, yeah? Except that Jean-Luc Mélenchon established a new political organisation, and Jeremy Corbyn did not, and he worked inside the Labour Party. Except that the other difference is that Jean-Luc Mélenchon is very well-dressed. And Jeremy Corbyn, not so much. You will see this. So here is the big story here, the big milestones here for. He was elected Labour leader in 2015. Everybody was surprised. They were probably even more surprised than in 1975 when Margaret Thatcher was elected. Because Jeremy Corbyn represented socialist ideas, support trade unions, nationalise the railways again, make sure universities are free, these kind of ideas. But these were ideas that the Labour Party leadership had kind of abandoned since 1997. So he represents the resurgence of radical socialist ideas inside the Labour Party. And of course, some people were extremely pleased that the socialist ideas had come back, and other people were extremely unhappy. And the people who were unhappy said, you know, it's impossible to win an election with these ideas, etc. Second thing you can see, he was elected Labour Party leader in 2015, and he was elected Labour Party leader again in 2016. Now, as you can imagine, parties do not have a leadership election every year. So this is a crisis. Yeah, he won the election, but he had so much of the party against him, and in particular the members of parliament against him, that he was forced to have another election one year later. So crisis. He won easily, as I shall show you in a moment. The following year, in 2017, Theresa May, the Conservative Prime Minister, of the government in crisis, just during the negotiations about Brexit between Britain and the European Union. The Conservative Prime Minister Theresa May was forced to call a general election,
a parliamentary election, the important one.
And Jeremy Corbyn's Labour Party got good results. I will give you the detail in a moment. They got good results. And so he was strengthened for a while. 2 years later, another general election. So we're talking about political crisis, and general elections are not supposed to happen every 2 years. Again, political crisis. Results not so good, and Jeremy Corbyn resigns after the 2019 general election. He resigns. And we have a new leader, Keir Starmer, who does not have the same ideas at all. And indeed, so much so that Jeremy Corbyn is no longer allowed today to be a Labour Member of Parliament. He is still a Member of Parliament, but he's not a Labour Member of Parliament. Because the new Labour leadership really do not like his ideas and said, I mean, we don't want you as a Labour Member of Parliament. So this is all quite a sign of a political crisis, but as you know, in many countries in Europe, including France, polarization and political crisis is kind of normal now. That's what we do. In France, the Socialist Party of François Hollande, they were the government, and then 3 months later they got 6% in the elections. That's political crisis, yeah. And we don't have quite that in Britain, but we have some of it. So let's have a look at a few of the newspapers before we continue. When Jeremy Corbyn was about to win the leadership election in 2015, this was the front page of Libération. Royaume-Uni, la gauche sort ses griffes. Longtemps sous-estimé, Jeremy Corbyn, figure radicale des travaillistes, fait désormais la course en tête pour le leadership du parti de Tony Blair. Okay, so a few interesting things there. First of all, if you look at the picture, I don't know if you're very good at analysing photographs. What do you think about the photograph there? What kind of person are they trying? Of course, you know the photographer chooses. If you take 100 photographs, you can give the impression you want. Yeah, if I want a photograph of you looking very aggressive, it's not difficult. I take 100 photographs and one of them will look aggressive, yes? No, not at all. That's another story on page 6. Yeah, that's another story. Good idea. But no, not at all. What about the photograph of Jeremy Corbyn? Quite a positive image, quite a negative image. What do you think? It's not easy. Not easy. Personne veut se mouiller. I think this is rather positive image. And this is a rather positive image. He's looking determined. He's also looking younger than he is. Cheating there. Yeah, sorry, you know. Serious, determined, not too stressed, quite relaxed. And I think this is quite a positive. And we will see some negative images of Corbyn in a moment. So, the front page of Libération for British politics. This was an important event, yeah? It was not just another leader. It was a very significant leader. Got the front page of Libération. I've never been on the front page of Libération. Actually, that's not true. Okay. Now the British press, as you know, the British press, the daily press, first of all, is very popular. A lot of people read it. And secondly, it's generally pretty conservative, and they certainly did not like Jeremy Corbyn. So you can see here a couple of front pages from conservative newspapers saying horrible things about Jeremy Corbyn. First of all, yeah, he supports terrorism. Now, as you can imagine, many other people consider that this is not true. I consider it ridiculous. But, you know, apologies for terror. And look at this photograph. They found a photograph of him with a hat which appears to be Russian. Yeah, which is it's all very very clever. Yeah, and this is Diane Abbott, a black woman MP. That's a negative photograph. Yeah, you can take a photograph of anybody like that if you want to. And over here, Jezza is Jeremy. Jeremy's jihadi comrades. Labour leader was at a rally with Islamic hate mob. Yeah, hate mob, a mob, c'est la racaille. La racaille de la haine islamique. La racaille islamique de la haine. C'est ça, Jeremy Corbyn. Well, you can see that this is a very strong campaign against Jeremy Corbyn. And I have to say, I mean, I've been following British politics for 50 years, and I have never seen a smear campaign like the one against Jeremy Corbyn. C'est la campagne de diffamation la plus impressionnante, perhaps since the 1920s. Yeah, there are really enormous things, and as you will see, there are, you know, he's a friend of terrorists, and otherwise they will find a new accusation every month. Indeed, a couple of university people from the London School of Economics analysed the treatment of Jeremy Corbyn in the media, his representation in the media, and this is what they said. So this is their article at the London School of Economics Research. Journalistic transgressions in the representation of Jeremy Corbyn, from watchdog to attack dog. The outsideness of Corbyn, which seduced many disenfranchised citizens to support him, was transformed by the British media into a form of dangerous otherness. As such, Corbyn was commonly depicted as an inimical political other, a deviant enemy of the British people and of the British state. So otherness, yes, that was the... There was something I was going to say about that. I can't remember what it was now. The outsideness of Corbyn. Yeah. Corbyn was not a typical politician. He likes making jam. What? He's a vegetarian. Huh? Bizarre. Also, he was not very easy for his team would try to make him sound more like a typical politician. Whereas if they took him somewhere to a housing estate or something, he would go into somebody would say, oh, come in and have a cup of tea. And he would go in and sit down and talk for 2 hours to this one person. And his team said, come on, we need some photographs. We need to keep you going. Yeah? And he wasn't very cooperative with the public relations people. He was also surprising in other ways. For the 2017 and 2019 elections, he had meetings, the biggest political meetings since 1945. Yeah, the biggest political meeting since 1945. And there you can see him speaking to this huge crowd. I don't know exactly where they are. Now, this is interesting because many people had thought that politics had changed. Many commentators thought that modern politics, the 21st century politics, what matters is social media, television, being very careful about your image. And the old-fashioned method of the big meeting and knocking on everybody's door, commentators considered that was finished. But Jeremy Corbyn demonstrated that is not always the case. And as I say, he didn't have just one meeting. Every time he came to a town, they had a hall, and then they had to have a video link to three more halls because there were so many people. People waited all day for his meetings. It was something was happening, which was very, very unusual. And here, this is the atmosphere inside one of the meetings. Just a photograph there. Indeed, Jeremy Corbyn even brought politics to places which are not usually very political. This, for example, is Glastonbury. It's one of the biggest music festivals in Britain. And they normally don't invite politicians to speak because it's music. But they invited Jeremy Corbyn to speak in 2017 to an audience which is mostly fairly young, probably 25 to 35, because the very young can't afford it. But it's a fairly young thing. So it was a presence of politics we were not used to. And the other thing, which there was also some rather amusing things that went on, and in particular, there was a new slogan that came up. I don't know if you heard this. Probably you didn't. You were that people began to make a slogan for Jeremy Corbyn. Let's see if I can find an example. Okay, now there's a couple of things about that. I think it's a couple of things about that, because it's really rather unusual, but also not so easy to understand, I think. So first of all, well, as you know, we live in a cynical age. People in general do not want to chant the names of politicians. Yeah? In fact, we generally prefer to insult them because, you know, we don't have politicians. And so it's rather unusual to have his name chanted. Incidentally, I don't know if you know, but during the presidential election in France, the crowds were beginning to shout Mélenchon président. Yeah? Mélenchon président. Yeah? And Mélenchon said, no, don't chant that. Chant résistance, résistance. Yeah. And so this is interesting. So he considered that it was not so good to have somebody chanting their personal name. And yet here in Britain, we have them chanting his personal name. And the way to understand this, I think, is to, first of all, Jeremy Corbyn is the absolute opposite of a megalomaniac. He prefers to make jam, you know. And so nobody imagines that this is like, you know, Stalin or Hitler. Nobody imagines that. And secondly, look at the tune. It's a bit of a joke. It's almost a joke. Yeah. Oh, Jeremy Corbyn. It's not a straightforward, serious chant. So it's a slight joke. And as you know, in British culture, everything should be a bit jokey. That's the normal thing to do, or there's a problem. And that doesn't mean it doesn't have a serious point. And so they were almost like, the crowd is almost like enjoying embarrassing Jeremy by chanting his name. There's something very interesting culturally about that, which is not only political. So in any case, he was being treated, especially by a lot of young people, as a tremendously new phenomenon, and perhaps some new ideas. Now, sometimes, occasionally, the newspapers would be in favour of him. This is the biggest Scottish newspaper, Scottish daily newspaper, the Daily Record, and they are supporting the leadership campaign of Jeremy Corbyn in 2015. Today, the Daily Record backs Jeremy Corbyn to be the next Labour leader for the sake of our nation. Remember, this is a Scottish newspaper, so when they say for the sake of our nation, they're talking about the Scottish nation. They're not talking about the British nation. That's not really their interest. Yeah, it's Scottish. Yeah. As you know, in France, many people think, oh, Scotland is a region. have written, don't say this in Scotland, you will lose all your friends. Yeah, they very much feel like a nation. But more often, the newspapers were against Corbyn. There were 10 newspapers against Corbyn and 2 in favour of Corbyn. I'm talking about the big newspapers. So here we have the Sun, and you can see, don't chuck Britain in the Corbyn. Non bin poubelle. Yeah, Corbyn. They're quite good at this, it has to be said. And you can see the list at the top left of all the things which, in the opinion of the Sun, are bad about Jeremy Corbyn. Terrorist friend. Okay. Useless on Brexit. Destroyer of jobs. Enemy of business. Massive tax hikes. Puppet of unions. C'est le marionnette des syndicats. La marionnette des syndicats. Nuclear surrender. Because Jeremy Corbyn is against nuclear weapons. And at the end, yeah, Marxist extremist, je crois qu'on peut dire qu'ils ne sont pas de son côté. Yeah. Today, here is the newspaper editorial. Today, this is election day. Today, you can rescue Britain from the catastrophe of a takeover by Labour's hard left extremists. Jeremy Corbyn would not just reverse 7 years of job creation and growth under the Tories, he would chuck our country's spectacular progress and prosperity over the last 35 years in the bin. Okay. Now, again, this is a particular characteristic of British newspapers. On election day, every newspaper, almost every newspaper, will tell you on the front page who they think you should vote for. We don't do this in France. We know who Le Figaro wants us to vote for, but they do not put it on the front page. It's not a tradition. French people don't like to be told what to do. Also in Britain, it's very election campaigns are very popular. If you walk down the street in London, you will see, a poster in the window, vote Labour. Oh, another poster, vote Conservative. You don't do this in France. It's me. On a pas gardé les vaches ensemble, je vais pas vous dire qui pour qui je vais voter. It's a very different sort of political culture. Another couple of newspapers on the left, a newspaper defending Corbyn. This is the Daily Mirror. Labour's manifesto on your side. Yeah, le Parti Travailliste est de votre côté. And on the other side, a negative one from the Daily Mail, conservative newspaper. The Marxist manifesto, in the most left-wing blueprint ever, Corbyn declares war on marriage. Oh my God. Inheritance and business. Families will face the crippling cost of Labour spending free. And the expert view, it's simply not credible. So there you go, you have the different views in the newspapers. I'm not going to bother with that one, I think. There you have all of the prime ministers of Britain since 2000. And like I say, you're not experts in suits. But if you look at everybody's suits here, these are more expensive suits and better suits. And they're better treated. And Jeremy Corbyn, sometimes he wore a suit, but he always looked like he didn't want to wear the suit. Okay, and indeed, in Parliament, when he was arguing with the Prime Minister said to him, Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister said to him, my mother would tell you to get a better suit. And this was actually in the Parliament it was said. So Jeremy Corbyn was often treated as bringing back radical left ideas, which many people didn't want anymore, but also as a person who was not respectable enough to be Prime Minister, that his style was not right. So let's have a look. Where did he come from, Jeremy Corbyn? He was born. He was born in 1949. So he is now 74. He did not go to private school, unlike almost everybody up there. And perhaps you remember I told you that in Britain, 7% of British people go to private school. 7%, not very high, because it's extremely expensive. He was elected local councillor many years ago. He joined the Labour Party when he was a teenager. He was a councillor for a while, and he was elected in 1983, So when he was 34, I think. Yep, 34. He was elected Member of Parliament for Islington North. This is a part of London. And he is still Member of Parliament for Islington North. So he has been the Member of Parliament for a part of London for 40 years. Every election he wins, every time, as a local MP, I mean. He's always been a supporter of the left wing of the party. His mother was a mathematics teacher. His father was an engineer. This photograph from the 1970s, this is not me, it's Jeremy Corbyn, okay, I was too young. And you can see a little bit of the hippie style of the Labour's programme in 1973. And he's also very earnest to say, let's change the world, yeah. Very determined picture of him, there. That's not so interesting. So what happened the year after the year 2000? Well, first of all, just a little note on some of Jeremy Corbyn's opinions. He is a Republican. He is against the monarchy. Now, in France, that's not really shocking. In Britain, as a professional politician in Britain, that can be a problem. Yeah, that's considered to be very controversial, not to want there to be a king. He's he is the vice president of the Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament. So he would like Britain to abandon the idea of having nuclear weapons. As you know, officially, there are only 5 countries in the world with nuclear weapons: the United States, Russia, China, France, and Britain, officially. Israel and Iran, unofficially. Pakistan, probably, as well. So Corbyn would like Britain to abandon this. He is also one of the leaders of the Stop the War coalition, which was very active against the war in Iraq, and the war in Afghanistan. Yes, probably. He's a leader of the Stop the War campaign, and the Stop the War campaign was huge a few years ago against the war in Iraq, later against the war in Afghanistan. He's not best known for what he did in Parliament. He's best known for what he did outside Parliament, more on the streets. He was a Labour Member of Parliament, but very often in Parliament he would vote what he believed, which was not the same as the leadership of the Labour Party. So the leadership of the Labour Party were often quite unhappy with him. In any case, 2015 came along, and it was time to choose a new leader of the Labour Party. And the left wing of the Labour Party were a little bit depressed. Yeah? Most of the members of Parliament did not agree with them. They were not having a lot of success. Somebody said, well, let's not have a candidate. Usually when you have a leadership campaign in the Labour Party, you have a right-wing candidate and a left-wing candidate, and maybe two more as well. Traditionally, the left-wing has a candidate, and they know they won't win. They're not expected to win. But they say, this way our ideas can be explained, we can participate in a debate, defend our ideas, and then we will lose. That's life. This time they had a meeting and said, well, I suppose we should have a left-wing candidate. What do you think? Oh, I did it last time. What do you think? Oh, I really don't want to. Jeremy, it's your turn. Oh, okay. Nobody imagined they would win. They had zero chance of winning. However, a lot of people in the Labour Party and also the trade unions were rather unhappy with the fact that the Labour Party had adopted some of Thatcher's ideas, they were getting very angry. And also, there were a lot of young people who had been becoming more radical and wanted a change. To everybody's surprise, the campaign began to take off. So Jeremy Corbyn said, no to austerity, let's encourage trade unions, let's make university free again. University was becoming expensive. Let's make it free again. let's nationalise the railways again. And everybody was tremendously surprised when he won. And here you have the results here. Now, the campaign was quite interesting because Jeremy Corbyn did not want to campaign in the usual way. When you were the candidate for the leadership campaign, you were supposed to phone members of Parliament and say, "Oh, hello, it's lovely to talk to you. I wonder if you would support me on this. You know, I could help you in this other way." And Joe said, "No, I'm not phoning anybody. I don't do that." And so his team were very frustrated. But social media and using mass meetings, they suddenly found themselves with a victory. And here is the victory. And I need to explain a little bit how it works. Because if you have a political party, you need to decide who should choose the leader. We want a new leader. Who should choose? And perhaps you know, in the United States, they have primary elections to choose the candidate, which is like the leader of the party. So anybody, in some states, anybody can vote for the leader. And in other states, you have to register as a Democratic supporter or as a Republican supporter. So that's one method. Well, let's see what they did in Britain. Well, they had three categories. First of all, members. A member of the Labour Party, yeah, they pay money every month. They sometimes go to Labour Party meetings. When it's election time, they knock on all the doors in the streets, say, "Oh, yes, will you come and vote for us?" So the members are the people who are the most committed to Labour government. And here you can see that Jeremy Corbyn got 49.6% of the members. That's excellent. The second person got 22.7%. That's a massive victory. Secondly, you have the affiliated supporters. Now, affiliated supporters are members of trade unions which are linked to the Labour Party. Most trade unions in Britain are linked to the Labour Party. And if you are a member of one of the trade unions linked to the Labour Party, you can vote for the leader. And in this case, he got 57% of the trade union. And finally, the registered supporters. Now, registered supporters, a little bit like the primaries in the United States, they just had to pay £3. It's not a lot of money, you know, €4. And register, and then they could vote. And as you can see, Jeremy Corbyn got 84% of the registered supporters. This meant that a very large number of people registered because they wanted to vote for Jeremy Corbyn. So a very large victory, a very impressive victory, but he immediately had some problems because most of the members of Parliament, the Labour members of Parliament, did not agree. I will come back to that in a moment, but first of all I need to explain a little bit of the history of the Labour Party in eight dates. I can do this without notes. What is the Labour Party? Where did it come from? How did it change? It all starts in 1884, because in 1884 a new law was passed which gave the vote to the majority of working class men. The majority of working class men got the vote in 1884. And for 20 years, or 16 years, they tried to work with the Liberal Party. There were two parties, the Conservative Party and the Liberal Party, and they tried to work with the Liberal Party so that working class people's interests would be taken into account. This was not a great success, and so in 1900 they said, "We need a new party. Let's form a new party. Let's form the Labour Party." And the Labour Party was formed in 1901. This was not very surprising at this period in France, Italy, Japan, Australia. They were all creating socialist parties. But the Labour Party was a little bit special. It was not exactly a socialist party. It had a lot of socialists and a lot of trade unionists and a lot of Christians. It was a kind of mix. Tout ce qui donne, vous le verrez pas ailleurs, une saveur tout à fait différente à la laïcité en France et en Angleterre. Because where did you find the political Christians in Britain in 1900? In the Labour Party. Whereas in France, they were very much opposed to the Socialists party. It's very interesting, but it's not today's question. So we have a new party, the Labour Party, and slowly they had one member of parliament, then they had two members of parliament. Life was very difficult at the beginning for the Labour Party. Also, at the time, members of parliament did not receive a salary, which means that only rich people can be members of parliament. If you don't receive a salary, how can you be a member of parliament? After 1911, members of parliament received a salary. And the Labour Party gradually gets stronger until in 1924, the Labour Party won the election. For the first time, they became the government of the country. And people were very excited. Well, Labour people were very excited. However, it was a minority government, you know, like Mr. Macron has today in France. And so there was a limited number of things they could do. But nevertheless, for 6 months, the Labour Party was the government. And then the Conservatives won. Was it the Liberals? Anyway, then another party won, and the Labour Party was no longer the government. The second Labour government in France was in 1929. And the Labour Party people were very excited because in 1929, the traditional socialist leader of Labour, Ramsay MacDonald, became Prime Minister. And people, the Labour Party people, thought, now everything will change. Everything will change for working people because we have a Labour government now in 1929. It didn't really work like that. I'm sure you remember 1929 was also the date of the biggest economic crisis in history. On parle de le crash de Wall Street. Absolutely spectacular. Every government was in crisis. And the result, to simplify a little bit, is 2 years later, the great socialist hero Ramsay MacDonald left the Labour Party and formed a government with the Conservative Party. This was the worst year in the history of the Labour Party. Everybody in the Labour Party was depressed. They said, we elected Prime Minister, our socialist hero, and 2 years later, he's forming a government with the Conservative Party. That's pretty depressing. And the 1930s were very, very depressing for Labour. Enormous poverty. We were back to the times when children did not have shoes. And the economy only got better in 1939 with the war. Now the war, of course, is pretty horrible. On the other hand, the working people of Britain, if they were not killed by the bombs or wounded by the bombs, lived better during the war. They had enough food to feed their children. So it's kind of a strange situation, but if you were not injured or killed by the bombs, working class people were less poor during the war. They actually, first of all, there was no unemployment. So everybody had enough to feed their children, it's a strange thing. And the end of the war, which I already spoke about last week, gave us in 1945 a massive victory for Labour under Clement Attlee and the biggest social reforms in the history of Britain. Free hospitals, free doctors, free dentists, social housing, the nationalisation of the railways, of the electricity, of the gas, money if you were unemployed, money if you were sick. An incredible set of reforms which appeared to be impossible to everybody. And yet happened in 1945. This was the golden age of Labour. Even today, if you talk to Labour Party people, you say, well, what have you done? So, well, you know, in 1945, yeah? Why do you have free doctors? It's because of the Labour Party in 1945, yeah? Which is not completely untrue. So 1945 was huge reforms. The Conservative Party, I mentioned last week, under Winston Churchill, came back to government in 1951, but maintained the world welfare state. They kept the free hospitals and the free doctors and the social housing because it was impossible to do anything else. These were the most popular reforms in history. And Winston Churchill was an intelligent man. And so he said, oh, okay, I've changed my mind. I think that free doctors are a good idea. The next victory for Labour was 1964. And Harold Wilson became the Prime Minister, the man who smoked a pipe. I think I said this at the Brighton conference. That's an excellent imitation of Harold Wilson, incidentally, but you will never know. That's how old I am. No, I was four, okay, I was four. But I was very advanced for my age. 1964. Now, the 1964 government, for 6 years, they did not introduce massive social reforms like in 1945. They were a little worried about spending too much money, etc. They did introduce some important reforms. The legalization of homosexuality, the legalization of abortion. These are big things. But they don't cost so much money as free doctors and social housing. And this will lead to the big crisis in the 1970s and then Thatcherism, 1979 onwards. And after Thatcherism, 1997, with Tony Blair becomes Prime Minister, and he becomes Prime Minister in saying, hey, let's take half of Thatcher's ideas and keep them, and let's take some Labour ideas as well. So Tony Blair openly said, the old ideas of Labour, we're not so interested in them anymore. Indeed, Tony Blair said, we are now New Labour. We're changing the name. The posters will not say Labour, they will say New Labour. Now, if you switch on the television tonight and you see the Pope, what's his name, Francis? I think so, Pope Francis. And he says, I have decided to name the church the New Catholic Church. You will be extremely surprised. Because if you change the name and you put new, this means the old one is no good. So when Tony Blair said we must call it New Labour, this means we must abandon the old ideas. And the old ideas are the ideas of Jeremy Corbyn in some ways. You have the ideas of working class organisation, the welfare state, and so on. Which brings us back then to 2015, where to many people's surprise, the socialist ideas, the ideas in favour of trade unions, in favour of reinforcing the welfare state, opposing Thatcherism, opposing the idea that private enterprise is the only really human way of organising activity, Jeremy Corbyn wins easily. So everybody's rather surprised. They thought that these ideas were dead. No, but they appear not to be. And now, as soon as he was elected, there was enormous campaign against him by his own members of parliament, the Labour members of parliament, which leads us to another important point about the Labour Party and the conflict inside the Labour Party. And one of the important elements of this is who should decide, inside the Labour Party, who should have the most power, who should have the most influence. It's a matter of opinion, but here are four groups who might have influence. First of all, the members of Parliament, the Labour members of Parliament who were elected, this one in Manchester, this one in Leeds, this one in Liverpool, the Labour members of Parliament, or the Labour members of Parliament say, we should have the most influence. We were elected by the people of a big town. Yeah, we have legitimacy. It's normal that we should decide because we were elected by large numbers of people. However, the members of Parliament also earn £91,000 a year, €10,000 a month. And so critics would say, they earn €10,000 every month. Can they really understand the problems of poor people? Will they really defend the interests of ordinary people? That's the argument. Secondly, trade union leaders. The leaders of trade unions, the trade unions in Britain have 6 or 7 million members. And most of the trade unions are linked to the Labour Party. So the trade unions say, hey, we should decide what happens in the Labour Party. Remember, the Labour Party was established in order to represent trade unions. That's the reason it was established in 1900. So we should be the most influential. You can see that really they're just two different opinions. You can't really, they all have their reasons. Thirdly, the individual members of the Labour Party, these are the people who do the work. In Manchester, every election, they knock on every door in the city and say, hello, I want to talk to you about the Labour Party. And so the individual members, they say, hey, we do the work. We should be the ones who decide who the leader is. So everybody has a good reason to say we should be the one. And finally, the registered supporters in this election for the leadership in 2015, they are people who paid only £3, but they paid £3 because they wanted to be involved in the choice of leader. Now, this last one is very interesting, because the idea that registered supporters should help choose the leader is a new idea introduced by Tony Blair. Because Tony Blair, who had the opposite ideas from Jeremy Corbyn, Tony Blair said, oh, members of parliament, they're sometimes very left-wing, trade unions, ooh la la. Let's have registered supporters and individual members. Let's give them more power, because Tony Blair was convinced that the left-wing radical ideas would always come from number one and number two, and would never come from number three and number four. And so this is why he changed the rules, and he said, yes, members and registered supporters will have a lot of choice, a lot of power in choosing the leader. However, unfortunately for Tony Blair, he could not imagine that there would be tens of thousands of radical left-wing people joining the Labour Party. And indeed, once Jeremy Corbyn was elected, let me see if I can find this, a huge number of new people joined the Labour Party. In fact, the day after he was elected, in one day, 15,000 people joined the Labour Party. The day after Jeremy Corbyn was elected leader, 15,000 new people joined the Labour Party. So, once he was in leadership, however, it was very difficult for him to work with the Labour members of Parliament. Many of them refused to take any job in his shadow cabinet. So he said, oh, I need a spokesperson on education. Will you do it? Oh, no. Many members of Parliament refused. And so he did what he could. Nevertheless, because of the enormous campaign against him, the Labour members of Parliament managed to force him to have another leadership election only one year after, in 2016. Now, when there was a new election, they did everything they could to make sure Jeremy Corbyn would not win. First of all, they said, oh, well, we're going to have an election and we're changing the rules, and Jeremy Corbyn cannot be a candidate for the new election because he doesn't have enough members of Parliament supporting him. So they actually wanted to have an election for a new leader, an election in which Jeremy Corbyn would not be allowed to be a candidate. They tried this, it didn't work, so they were rather unhappy, and they changed the rules again. They said, okay, registered supporters. In the past, people had to pay £3, now they must pay £25. So they changed the rules, so it was £25. It's still not, it's not a huge amount of money, but you know, it's much more money. And so they did everything they could to stop him from winning. But they were not successful, and in fact Jeremy Corbyn won the leadership election with more support than before. The last thing they did, the people who did not agree with Jeremy Corbyn, they said, oh well, there's obviously a problem here. We had three candidates against him. Oh, that's not good. Let's have just one candidate against him. That's obviously a better idea. And there, one candidate against him was Owen Smith, and you can see there what happened. Total votes, 313,000 for Jeremy Corbyn, 193,000 for Owen Smith, and in fact Jeremy Corbyn received a bigger percentage than 2015. So you have a situation where the leader of the Labour Party is very popular, except among Labour members of Parliament. Slightly bizarre, slightly unusual situation, but that's what we call contingency or historical accident. And so there he was, and the Labour members of Parliament and the press continued to try to present Jeremy Corbyn in a very negative manner. This is probably the most impressive example. This is the Sunday Times. Normally, it's a very serious newspaper. It's not the Sun. And you can see here, Corbyn's anti-Semite army. So an extremely impressive defamation campaign. Because Jeremy Corbyn defends Palestine, he was accused on the front page of the Sunday Times of being anti-Semitic. In the case of Jeremy Corbyn, this is particularly ridiculous because he was Member of Parliament from 1983, and between 1983 for 35 years, nobody ever said Jeremy Corbyn is anti-Semitic. Nobody. But when he became Labour leader, suddenly he was being accused of being anti-Semitic. So this is a reply from a Jewish member of the Labour Party in the town where Jeremy Corbyn lives. She was a member of the Labour Party with Jeremy Corbyn for 40 years, and so she explains why she thinks it's not true. But that was not the only thing. Here we have another one. S'il n'est pas antisémite, il est peut-être espion communiste. On ne sait jamais. So there you have the Sun, Corbyn and the commie spy. Yeah, that he was a communist spy. Again, this is how smear campaigns work. The problem is not that people believe them. Mais les gens sont censés dire, il n'y a pas de fumée sans feu. So people are not supposed to say, oh yes, this is absolutely true. They're supposed to say, there's no smoke without fire. There must be some problem. And this is very impressive. Here we have a humorous, from one of the big, humorous attempt. This is a newspaper office. This is humor. This is a joke, yeah? Humor of, our journalist sources say that Corbyn was in the IRA, and he was in the CIA, and he was in the KGB and MA5, and he was in ABBA in the 1970s. Or so. British humor for you, if you like. Now, the next things that happens is that the Conservative government is obliged to call a general election. And here are some of the front pages in the time just before the general election of 2017. So here, the Independent becoming rather positive. Can you see that's a rather positive picture? That's a rather positive picture. Corbyn sharp left turn. So in this case, the headline is neutral. Tournant à gauche de Corbyn, c'est un fait. Ils ne disent pas dans le titre si c'est une bonne chose ou une mauvaise chose. And so this is the new slogan of the Labour Party, for the many, not the few. And so here you have the Independent is becoming kind of neutral. Labour launches its most radical manifesto since the 1980s. Railways to be renationalised, etc. This is a Conservative newspaper, the Daily Mail, and as you can see here, we have a rather negative photograph. Yeah? He looks like he's on drugs, doesn't he? He's taking drugs. So, Corbyn's fantasy land, his class war manifesto, would cost every family £4,000, a negative one. But this might be the most important one. This is the New Musical Express. It's the biggest music newspaper for young people in Britain. And they never put politicians on the front page. Never. Except in 2007, Jeremy Corbyn on the front page of the New Musical Express. Which is a very, very impressive thing. And he did. He had another bit of. There were also all sorts of initiatives to try to support Corbyn. For example, there was a few young musicians who established an organisation, Grime for Corbyn. Grime is a kind of music, I understand. Okay, I'm not very good at this. He was also lucky because he spoke to Theresa May, the Prime Minister, and he said, I want to have a television debate with you. And Theresa May said no. People don't like it when you... Because Theresa May's position was, he's not a serious opponent. But people don't like it when you refuse to debate. People don't like that. So what was the result? Well, the result was that after the election, the Conservatives were still the government. However, they became a minority government. That is to say that they had more seats than any other party, but they did not have 51% of the seats. You need 325. You need 325 seats for a majority in the British Parliament. Sorry, 326. Yeah, 326 seats. That doesn't matter so much. So they didn't have it. So here they have a problem because they have the Scottish National Party, are rather left-wing, definitely not conservative. The Greens also, and Plaid Cymru and Sinn Féin are definitely not conservative. The Liberals are sometimes conservative. And Theresa May was obliged to make an alliance with the Democratic Unionist Party, which is an extreme right party from Northern Ireland. So let's say that Jeremy Corbyn's Labour Party managed to cause a lot of problems for Theresa May and the Conservative government and obliged them to become a minority government. If you look at the number of votes, sorry? Oh, the Democratic Unionist Party. Yeah, the Democratic Unionist Party. It's a Northern Ireland party of very Christian Protestants. It's a bit like what some of the Christian parties in the United States. It's really... C'est pas gentil de dire que sont tous des tarés, mais c'est un peu ça, quoi. Most of the members of Parliament of the Democratic Unionist Party believe that everything in the Bible is true. So it's not usually a wonderful thing, in my opinion. Some things in the Bible are true, I suppose. If we look at this is the number of members of Parliament, yeah, the number of seats, le nombre de siège. But if we look at the number of votes, you can see that Jeremy Corbyn's result was quite respectable. So there were 13.6 million people voted Conservative, 12.8 million voted Labour. You could say, let's say that Jeremy Corbyn's supporters pointed to this and said, it is possible to get a very good result with left-wing policies of nationalisation, trade union, etc. Now, as the crisis went on, and in particular the crisis around Brexit went on, the referendum was finished and the government was negotiating with the European Union, this caused enough of a crisis for a new election only 2 years later, and in this case the Labour Party did quite badly. And so you can see that in 2017 the Labour Party had 262 seats. And 2 years later, 203 seats. Not so good. And if you look at the votes, in 2017, the Labour Party had 12.8 million. And 2 years later, only 10.2 million. So definitely. So the 2019 results were not good. Why? Well, this is always a difficult question, I mean, people don't agree, but it seems to me that it was around the reaction to leaving the European Union. Because before the 2019 election, the Labour leadership had said, oh, well, the referendum voted to leave the European Union, but maybe we could think again. And this was not popular. This was not popular. Most people, either there were the people who voted to leave the European Union, say, "Hey, we won, do it." But there were also some people who voted to stay in the European Union, but respected the democratic vote, which they lost. Now, the whole Brexit thing is very complicated. Everybody was divided. In particular, every working class family was divided. My mother was for leaving, my sister was for remaining, my auntie was for remaining, I was for leaving, everybody was... And what's more, the people who wanted to stay it was sometimes for conservative reasons and sometimes for progressive reasons. And the people who wanted to leave, it was sometimes for right-wing reasons and sometimes for left-wing reasons. Je crois que le terme technique c'était c'était le bordel. And so, you know, that in any case, that seems to have, a few months later, as often happens when you have bad results in an election, Jeremy Corbyn resigned and was replaced by Keir Starmer, who shares very few ideas with Jeremy Corbyn. He's more back to the Tony Blair kind of Labour Party. So what does this story show? First of all, it shows that the Labour Party has a lot of different ideas inside it. Yes?
Can you repeat?
Mr. Starmer, Starmer, Keir Starmer. His first name is Keir, K-E-I-R, and his second name is Starmer, S-T-A-R-M-E-R, and he is not the same ideas at all. So why is this important? Well, this story shows that there are a lot of different ideas inside the Labour Party. It also shows that we live, and we know this in France as well, politics in the last 20 years, this is, you know, it's a time of political crisis. It's not, c'est pas les 30 glorieuses, is that? And so some very surprising things can happen. Yeah, Thatcherism being victorious was quite surprising, and Corbynism not managing to be prime minister but getting a mass following was quite surprising, and spoiler, probably some more surprising things will happen in the next few years. Yeah, this is what you're supposed to think, as usual in university classes, you're supposed to think, oh, it's more complicated than I thought. That's good. Yeah, we want you to think that it's more complicated than you thought. Okay, so let's have a look at one of these, this speech by Jeremy Corbyn, and I want you just to spend a moment to read lines 51 to 82. 51 to 82.